I will discuss legal aspects of neurotrauma. Since neurotrauma typically refers to traumatic brain injury, also known as TBI, and the vast majority of TBI concerns concussion, I will speak to the interplay between medical or physician's assessment of concussion and the resulting medical narrative regarding the occurrence of that injury that often dictates how this injury gets represented or classified in various legal spheres. Attorneys are informed and typically guided by medical diagnosis. The adequacy of the medical assessment therefore largely determines the quality of the attorney's proof. The following concepts bear importantly on the challenges posed to attorneys in proving a concussion from a trauma. First, concussion is also described as mild traumatic brain injury, or MTBI. MTBI signifies an insult to the brain, although not necessarily a blow to the head. It is characterized by a transient alteration of consciousness. This doesn't have to be loss of consciousness. Daze, confusion, disorientation, and shock all qualify as alterations, even if they just last momentarily or for a few seconds. With most concussions, by the time a patient gets to the emergency room, assuming they even get there following a trauma, they usually appear fine. They are often alert in terms of knowing what time it is and where they are and who they are, and headache may be their only symptom, and often that may not even be present. Even if they are examined in the emergency room by a neurologist, that specialist will often find no sign of symptoms or signs of injury. This can prove a big problem for attorneys trying to prove concussion injury down the road, as people expect injuries to be most symptomatic right after a trauma. If there has been trauma to the head, patients will often get a CAT scan or sometimes an MRI to their brain. But with concussion, these studies are usually negative, meaning they don't show injury, as negative injury is popularly equated with no injury. That increases the attorney's challenge of proving injury to the brain. If the patient is lucky to get to an emergency room immediately following a trauma and also receive a concussion or MTBI diagnosis, that certainly will help the attorney's ability to prove that the injury comes to court. However, the majority of patients who have actually suffered a concussion will be discharged from the emergency room without that diagnosis, with no diagnosis at all. This creates a significant hurdle for the attorney. For at a trial, the question will inevitably arise: if there was a brain injury, how come there wasn't a diagnosis from the emergency room doctors? The relative absence or even complete absence of early symptoms following many concussions require these brain insults to be classified as MTBI. But that classification, mild traumatic brain injury, does not speak to the ultimate outcome of this injury. Rather, only that the initial symptoms do not suggest an imminent danger requiring the patient's immediate hospitalization. But for an attorney, even though the diagnosis of mild TBI, MTBI, is better than nothing in terms of the ability to prove that a concussion resulted from a past trauma, the term mild itself creates another substantial causation hurdle. For most people, the word mild suggests insignificant. The attorney has to dispel that inference if he or she wants to show chronic disabling problems that a concussion can cause. This is a semantic problem, but for many attorneys, a steep one to overcome in trying to prove that in their client's case, that quote-unquote mild TBI does not mean that their client's injuries from a trauma were quote-unquote mild. It is challenging to make that case to lay people, especially in the absence of virtually no documented initial signs of symptoms and negative imaging, which is often the case. For the injury who is representing a client with chronic mental problems from a concussion, there are other recurrent hurdles to overcome. A big one is the emphasis placed on loss of consciousness. The emergency room physician will routinely ask the patient about its occurrence following a trauma, but often the patient will not know if they've suffered loss of consciousness. In the emergency room, this gets marked as a no, even though a loss of consciousness may have occurred. To many people, TBIs are a zero-sum game. The existence of a TBI comes down to whether there was a loss of consciousness or not. But TBI, traumatic brain injury, does not require loss of consciousness. All the alterations of consciousness that I mentioned earlier, daze, shock, confusion, etc., justify the diagnosis of concussion, even if, as I said, they are experienced only momentarily. And even though those types of alterations don't warrant hospital admission from the emergency room. Yet medical personnel rarely ask about these alterations or note their occurrence in the medical record. One of the most significant features of brain injury is anterograde amnesia. This is a disruption in the continuity of conscious experience following a trauma. Unlike retrograde amnesia, which refers to an inability to remember things that preceded a trauma, anterograde amnesia is not a forgetfulness problem. Rather, it refers to the brain being so shaken up by a trauma that it basically goes offline and cannot form new memories until it comes back online. That can take seconds, minutes, or even sometimes hours. Investigating anterograde amnesia requires careful inquiry regarding the continuity of memory following the trauma. The question that should be asked is, what's the next thing you remember after the trauma? If there's a gap in the recalled experience, that points to the presence of an anterograde amnesia. But medical personnel rarely ask that question, as the answer does not affect whether the patient needs to be admitted to the hospital. However, that omission by medical personnel misses a very helpful opportunity for attorneys seeking to prove concussion after often a long time after the traumatic event. Another major source of difficulty and challenge for attorneys in proving concussion is that most mild TBIs are essentially white matter injuries. Yet physicians are essentially gray matter doctors. Let me explain. The brain consists of white matter and gray matter. Gray matter refers to the approximate 100 billion cells we each have. Each one of those cells functions as a mini computer. White matter is what connects those billions of mini computers, making the brain essentially a multiprocessor. But physicians are, for the most part, trained only to assess injury to the gray matter. So they miss, in their assessment, white matter problems. Additionally, conventional brain imaging like CAT scans and MRIs performed following head injury are geared to detect accurately gray matter injuries, but are very insensitive in their detection of white matter. That's why they are usually negative in imaging concussions. Many concussions are caused by sudden acceleration-deceleration inside the brain. In other words, the brain experiences an internal whiplash. As it gets shaken up, the gray matter moves at a different speed than the white matter. The white matter gets pulled in the process of that separation. This is called shearing. Shearing damages the white matter. As a result of this white matter shearing damage, the brain's ability to communicate among its brain cells declines. Even low-impact motor vehicle collisions can generate sufficient whiplash forces inside the brain to inflict significant and permanent shearing damage. But in contrast to gray matter injuries, whose effects are typically immediately visible to even non-physicians, white matter shearing damage can take time, weeks, even months to appear. This time lapse makes it harder for the attorney to connect the trauma to the typically resulting brain deficits in thinking and personality. Finally, higher level functioning thinking deficits such as memory, attention, concentration, which are associated with white matter damage, may not be obvious from talking to a patient. They only become evident after long-term observation of during tasks or work. So without careful white matter assessment, the patient's brain-related problems from trauma can often go diagnosed. Consequently, these injuries are often missed unless the physician or attorney has the insight to pursue the special medical investigations necessary to detect white matter damage. What that entails is the subject of a whole other talk.